morning and welcome everyone. This is an open meeting of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board held on March 22nd, 2011. We want to welcome all of you who have joined us in person or who are listening on this webcast. Today the board will hear a report from the Office of its Chief Auditor on the results of the information gathering stage of the board's initiative consider improvements to the auditor's reporting model. Before we proceed with the agenda, I want to note for the record that all board members are present. The first and only order of business is a staff presentation on the Office of Chief Auditor's outreach about potential changes to the auditor's reporting model. The auditor's reporting model is the primary means by which the auditor communicates with investors and other users of audited financial statements, and yet it has not been significantly modified since the 1930s. Over the years, as many of you know, several committees and groups such as the Cohen Commission, the Treadway Commission, the American Assembly have taken up this issue of what the report is, what it should be, what it says about what auditors do, and whether there should be improvements or changes to be made. And that has been a continuing exercise since almost the beginning, but as we have lived through the recent financial crises, terms, nomenclature such as a brittle illusion, expectations gap, these have entered our vocabulary, and they are clear danger signs to us as a financial community that we should think about this and take it up, treat it seriously. Most recently, the Treasury Advisory Committee on the Auditing Profession recommended that this board undertake a standard-setting project to consider improvements to the auditor's reporting model. Now, that Treasury Advisory Committee report specifically recommended that as part of what we did, as part of that initiative, this board should consult with, quote, investors, other financial statement users, auditing firms, public companies, academics, and others. And that is exactly what we've done. And we're here today to receive a report on that outreach and to discuss the next steps in this important project. I personally think it's one of the most important projects that the board can take up and will take up. And with that, I want to turn it over to our chief auditor, Mr. Martin Bauman.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. We're pleased this morning to discuss our outreach efforts to investors and others about potential changes in the auditor's reporting model. Joining me in the presentation today is Jennifer Rand, our Deputy Division Director and Deputy Chief Auditor. And I'd also like to recognize the hard work of the other members of our team who have been so critical to this effort, and they are Jessica Watts, Dan Mutzig, and Deanne Jules. I'd also like to thank them in advance for the hard work that I know is still in front of them as we move towards a planned concept release, open meeting roundtable discussion, and proposed standard. I'd also like to thank the many individuals we spoke to during our outreach. Many of them spent over a half day with us discussing their views of the current auditor's report and how the report could be changed to provide greater transparency to investors. Because of that outreach, we are much better informed about the areas of change where investors seek additional information, how those changes should be reflected in the report, and possible challenges in doing so. Our objectives for today's open meeting with the board are to describe the nature and extent of the Office of the Chief Auditor's outreach regarding the auditor's reporting model and the input received on that outreach, and secondly, to seek the board members' views on the input received from the outreach and any other topics or areas to further explore as my staff works towards developing a concept release. In the board's October 2010 standing advisory group meeting, the Office of the Chief Auditor discussed the importance of its standard-setting initiative on the auditor's reporting model. This initiative includes considering whether improvements should be made to the standard auditor's report. The board's standing advisory group, its investor advisory group, and the Advisory Committee on the Auditing Profession, or ACAP, convened by the U.S. Department of Treasury, all recommended that the PCAOB consider whether such improvements should be made to the standard auditor's report, and to consult with investors and others in the financial reporting supply chain to obtain their input on this topic. Consistent with these recommendations, from October 2010 through March 2011, my office conducted in-person meetings and held conference calls with over 80 individuals consisting of investors, preparers, audit committee members, auditors, regulators and other standard setters, and academia. The participants represented a diverse group of organizations and companies, domestic and international, as well as small, medium, and very large. The interactive dialogue among the outreach participants provided us with deep insight into the areas of potential changes in the auditor's report, how those changes could be presented, as well as the benefits and challenges of doing so. Investors have long indicated that they are the auditor's customer, and therefore the auditor's responsibility is to report to the investor in a manner which meets the investor's needs. Investors are seeking more useful and relevant information from the auditor beyond the current pass-fail auditor report. Let me quote a simple observation made by the Cohen Commission when it examined the auditor's report in 1978, some 33 years ago. Quote, "For the largest corporations in the country, an audit may involve scores of auditors and tens of thousands of hours of work for which the client may pay millions of dollars. Nevertheless, the auditor's standard report compresses that considerable expenditure of skilled effort into relatively few words and paragraphs." Close quote. Although the Cohen Commission highlighted that the communication between the auditor and users of the audit report was unsatisfactory, most of the Commission's recommendations were not implemented. Investors recognize that the audit is a valuable process that requires extensive time, effort, and audit judgment. The main point is that investors are seeking a more innovative product from the auditor. In short, investors see the audit report as the product of the audit for which they are paying, and in general note that that product hasn't changed in any substantive way over the last 100 years. This view is also consistent with the views expressed in the recent presentation by the working task force of the board's investor advisory group. At the last IAG meeting, the board heard a presentation from some of the group's members about a survey they conducted to solicit views regarding changes to the auditor's report. The group surveyed investors in investment banks, mutual funds, pension funds, hedge funds, and others. Both the IAG survey and our outreach underscore that investors believe they need more information from the auditor regarding the auditor's views on audit risk, management's judgments and estimates, and the quality of management's accounting policies. Investors have indicated that this information would be valuable in informing their investment decisions. As part of our outreach activities, we explored the reasons driving investors' request for changes in the auditor's report. The essence of the issue is as follows. The current auditor's report states that the financial statements are fairly presented or not. The binary yes-no on-off report. Auditing standards allow for circumstances where the auditor can provide emphasis of matters. However, this option is rarely used by the auditor. A chief investment officer in a mutual fund who participated in the IAG survey said that, quote, "The audit report is largely boilerplate and only provides meaningful information in extreme circumstances, usually around going concern issues," close quote. Investors have also expressed that they are tired of surprises. They believe that if they had a better understanding of some of the types of matters that auditors discuss with audit committees about audit risks and how they dealt with those audit risks, or the auditor's views on management's judgments and estimates, then these investors might have a better idea of how to anticipate certain events or issues, may know where to do more research as part of their investment analysis, or could use this additional information as part of their investment valuation process. Investors cite the recent financial crisis as an example of where an expanded auditor's report may have been extremely helpful. Investors indicated that if the audit report included a discussion of the most significant judgments in the financial statements and the areas in the auditor's view of greatest risk, investors would have been able to probe further into matters such as complex valuation models, concentrations of credit risk, measurement uncertainty in the allowance for loan losses, and the difficult decisions to consolidate or leave off the balance sheet various entities and potential liabilities. Other factors driving the need for change or improvements in the auditor's report include the nature of business becoming more global and complex, and the nature of accounting rules moving towards more principles-based standards, resulting in even more need for management judgment and estimates in the preparation of financial statements. The mission of the PCAOB is to oversee the audits of public companies in order to protect the interests of investors and further the public interest in the preparation of informative, accurate, and independent audit reports. We recognize there are many different views on whether changes should be made to the auditor's report, and if so, what changes should be made. Throughout this process, we have aimed to be responsive to investors while being mindful that any potential changes or improvements should enhance or at least preserve audit quality. We also recognize that some of the potential areas of consideration that you will hear today may require SEC or FASB collaboration and their rulemaking, depending on who should provide additional information for investors, that is, auditors through their audit report, management through improved financial statement disclosures, or audit committees through expanded audit committee reporting. We also recognize that it behooves us to explore potential challenges to the auditor's reporting model that were noted by preparers, audit committee members, and auditors. With that, let me now turn the discussion over to Jennifer Rand to provide a further discussion regarding the outreach and results. I'll then describe later possible changes to the auditor's reporting model. Jennifer?
Thank you, Marty. Regarding the nature and extent of OCE's outreach efforts, our focus on the outreach was primarily on improving the current standard auditor's report, considering the auditor's responsibilities today. In our discussions, it did lead to some areas where auditors could provide greater assurance in certain areas, but principally our focus was on the current auditor's report and the auditor's current responsibilities. Before we began our outreach, we reviewed numerous amounts of information to help inform the types of questions we should ask in our outreach. We reviewed academic research, surveys, and other publications to inform the structure and nature of our outreach efforts. And we also considered the input and advice of our standing advisory group and the investor advisory group, as well as activities of other standard setters and regulators. As Marty mentioned, our outreach consisted of in-person meetings and conference calls with more than 80 individuals, several of which are with large constituency groups. Our first area of focus was to meet with investors. We wanted to hear from them first, since they're the group we've been hearing are calling for change, and that is where the PCOB's mission is directed. In our meetings with investors, we met with individuals who were money managers, asset management funds, with pension funds, and wealth management funds. We also met with individuals from organizations that represent institutional investors, investor advocates, buy and sell side analysts from some of the largest investment firms, and analysts from some of the largest credit rating agencies. Our next area of focus after meeting with investors and hearing their views was to obtain views from preparers, audit committees, and auditors. Participants in our preparer discussions included representatives from several Fortune 50 companies, Fortune 500 companies, and some smaller public companies. Participants in our audit committee discussions included representatives from small non-accelerated filers to Fortune 50 companies. And our participants in our auditor discussions included leaders from large and small accounting firms who audit both accelerated and non-accelerated filers. We also obtained the perspectives of individuals who previously held leadership roles in the accounting profession or at regulatory organizations. Some of these individuals have contributed to several discussions and commissions that have resulted in recommendations regarding the auditor's report, such as the American Assembly, the Cohen Commission, Panel on Audit Effectiveness, and ACAP. In our outreach, we sought the participants' views in four key areas, probing deeply into each of them. The first area is whether changes or improvements were needed to the auditor's report, and if so, what type of changes or improvements were needed. The second area, which types of changes or improvements were most important, and how the changes or improvements would be valuable to them. Third, what were their preferences regarding the current pass-fail model and standard auditor's report? We've heard a lot of concern from investors that's not sufficient, and we want to understand if there's any value behind the current pass-fail and auditors and the reporting today. And then finally, what were their views regarding the format of the audit report? If there is some type of additional information, how would that be presented in the report itself? Let me now turn to a discussion of the views we obtained from the various participants from our recent outreach, starting with investors. Investors, as Marty mentioned, expressed a desire to obtain more information from the auditor and the auditor's report in a number of areas, which I will summarize into five main groups. The first is investors are interested in the audit or what the auditor did. Information in this category includes information about the risks identified by the auditor, materiality, engagement statistics, and independence. The second area investors are interested in from the auditor are the auditor's views on the company's financial statements or what the auditor found in performing the audit. This includes auditor's views on management's judgments and estimates, accounting policies, and difficult or contentious issues. The third area investors are seeking are clarifications in the language in the standard auditor's report, such as the auditor's responsibility for fraud. The report doesn't mention the auditor's responsibility for fraud today, but auditors have a responsibility to plan and perform in an audit to detect whether there's a material misstatement, whether due to error or fraud. Another is the meaning of reasonable assurance. Investors are looking for clarification on that, such as that it's not absolute assurance, but it's a very high level of assurance. And also the auditor's responsibility for disclosures. That responsibility isn't specifically mentioned, although the financial statements includes the disclosures, and investors think adding disclosures might be helpful. The fourth main area is seeking clarity or enhanced responsibility for information outside the financial statements, such as MD&A. Some investors said they would like some level of auditor assurance on MD&A and other information outside the financial statements, such as non-GAAP information and earnings releases. The auditor's responsibility today for other information is to read and consider whether such information or the manner in which it's presented is materially inconsistent with the financial statements or represent a material misstatement of fact. And the fifth area that investors have told us is they are interested in information in the report similar to key issues shared between the auditor and the audit committee. For instance, auditors communicate with the audit committee about a number of matters, including significant accounting policies, management judgments, and accounting estimates, among many others. We then met with preparers after hearing what investors are seeking. And overall, preparers generally do not agree that the auditor should provide additional information about the company's financial statements in the auditor's report, although they are somewhat less concerned about providing more information about the audit. So what the auditor did, about what the audit is about, preparers are more comfortable with than describing what the auditors are found or possibly presenting conflicting views, which was currently disclosed by management in the financial statements. Preparers' concerns include obscuring the responsibilities of management and the auditor, the auditor disclosing information that would be in addition to or in conflict with management's disclosures, and also their concern about the cost of additional auditor reporting, as well as the potential impact it could have on the overall relationship between the auditor and management. While preparers would prefer that any additional disclosures come from them, not from the auditors, preparers said they would be supportive of changes to the auditor's report that are fact-based and not subjective in nature. Changes that are fact-based that they are supportive of including are clarifying certain language in the auditor's report, such as responsibility for fraud and disclosures, clarifying in an auditor's report what an auditor does and does not represent, such as it provides an opinion on the financial statements, not the overall financial health of the company. Next is referring readers to significant areas in the financial statements so the auditor could include a list of areas that the auditor considered were significant and reference back to management's disclosures in the financial statements. Our next group is audit committee members' views. And overall, audit committee members' views are generally consistent with preparer views. Similar to preparers, they're supportive of changes that would clarify the language in the standard auditor's report, and the auditor highlighting management's critical policies by including references to where those policies are disclosed by management. However, audit committee members have expressed some concerns, and those include that additional auditor reporting may undermine the role of the audit committee, since management or the audit committee are in a better position to provide additional company information. And since audit committees have oversight responsibility for the audit on behalf of investors and meet regularly with management and investors, audit committee members have expressed that the investor may not have the appropriate context for audit committee communications. And finally, the possibility that auditor reporting on matters communicate to the audit committee might stifle that relationship between the auditor and the audit committee. We then met with auditors to get their perspective, and overall, auditors' views are generally consistent with preparers and audit committees' views regarding the fact that auditors should not be the original source for providing additional information about the company or the financial statements. They believe additional information should be fact-based or objective rather than subjective and should not obscure the roles of the audit committee, management, or the auditor. However, auditors are supportive of changes that clarify the language in the auditor's report. Additionally, some auditors have indicated the following as possible areas for change as it relates to the auditor's reporting model. The first is auditors could suggested they could potentially provide some type of auditor association with management's disclosures of a critical accounting estimates in the MD&A, since this information includes much of the types of information being requested by investors. The next area is if the audit committee report were to be expanded, auditors could explore providing some level of assurance on that type of report. This is similar to the type of reporting currently being considered by the UK Financial Reporting Council. And the next area auditors suggested there could be potential changes for the auditor's report to provide additional information with respect to audit scope and procedures, including a discussion of client-specific audit procedures performed. Auditors expressed some concerns regarding enhanced providing additional information in the auditor's report. The first area was concerns about auditor litigation, client confidentiality, and privacy concerns. The next is a time and effort to prepare, review, and provide enhanced auditor reporting within the current public filing deadlines. Auditors believe that a written auditor's discussion and analysis, for instance, or an AD&A, as some have called it, of the financial statements would consume considerable time, including firm-wide review for consistency, resulting in significant delay in the filing of an annual report. The next concern they expressed was the impact to the relationship with management and the audit committee as a result of the potential for additional public auditor reporting on the types of information being requested. That completes the summary of input that we received from the different groups we met with in our outreach efforts. Before I turn it to Marty, let me just touch briefly on our monitoring of developments of other standard setters and other regulators. Many other organizations around the globe, as I'm sure you're aware, are revisiting the auditor's reporting model. such as IOSCO, the European Commission, the Financial Reporting Council, and the IAASB, reflecting considerable attention focused on this matter. We've been monitoring these developments, and it has informed our outreach efforts, as it will also inform our continued work as we move forward on a concept release. Let me now turn it back over to Marty, while he would discuss areas of possible change to the report and possible challenges raised by outreach participants.
Thanks. Let me now conclude a summary discussion with some potential changes to the auditor's reporting model that we may explore on a concept release. I'll comment first on the existing audit report and then discuss supplemental auditor reporting. In general, investors believe that the audit report should continue to make it clear whether financial statements present fairly or not, and that the additional information they seek should be in a supplemental report to the primary audit report itself. With regard to the existing standard auditor's report, the options we've heard and could explore are as follows, and there's three of them. First, make no changes to the existing standard auditor's report. The second is the clarification in the existing standard auditor's report that Jennifer made reference to, clarifying certain terms such as reasonable assurance, the auditor's responsibility for fraud, the auditor's responsibility for other information in the financial statements. A third option for the current standard auditor's report would be really to shorten it to what's called an opinion-only report, a very short one-paragraph opinion-only. Some investors say that the opinion is the only valuable piece of information in that report and that the other information obscures the opinion. Based on our outreach, most investors seem to be supportive of the second option that was staying with largely the standard auditor's report and clarifying certain terms. However, the real issue where investors want to hear more is around this supplemental information to the standard auditor's report. And there are a few different options that we heard and discussed with auditors and others. The first and clearly the most commonly requested is for the auditor to provide an auditor's discussion and analysis, or AD&A, as it is being called, to supplement the standard auditor's report. This would have an appropriate language in it that would indicate that it's integral to the audit opinion on the financial statements taken as a whole, and that it doesn't represent separate assurance on individual accounts, balances, or transactions. And it would include some or all of the following. The first would be discuss the auditor's views regarding the audit, significant risks identified in the audit, and the auditor's responses to those risks, materiality considerations, and matters which could be thought to bear on auditor independence, examples like that. Or it could include the discussion of the auditor's views regarding the company's financial statements. As we've discussed earlier, that would include the auditor's views regarding management's judgments and estimates, the reasonableness of inputs and assumptions used in those estimates, and the quality, not just the acceptability, of the company's financial reporting policies. Or some investors would want to see discussions of both of those, the audit and the views on the financial statements. A second option is to expand or require the use of an emphasis paragraph. As noted earlier, an auditor, at its discretion, may emphasize in the auditor's report a matter regarding the financial statements. An example noted in the current auditing standard is for the use of an emphasis paragraph when an entity has a significant transaction with related parties. But in practice, emphasis paragraphs are rarely used. Recommendations we've heard have been to expand the list of illustrative examples where emphasis matters could be used, or require the use of emphasis paragraph and prescribe additional matters that should be or must be discussed in the emphasis report. The third model would be to provide an auditor discussion regarding critical judgments made in forming the auditor's opinion. This is similar to a current model that's being used in France. Provide a discussion of the auditor's assessment of the most significant accounting matters, judgments or estimates that affect the financial statement presentation, a high-level summary of the key audit procedures performed by the auditor in those areas, and reference to the related disclosures in the financial statements. The benefit seen of this model is that by the auditor in a special report making reference to information in the financial statements would likely improve the quality of work the auditor did in that area, and the reference being made by the auditor to those areas of the financial statements might likely improve the quality of disclosures in those critical areas of the financial statements. The fourth area of improvement is to require auditor association with MD&A, as was previously discussed. And the fifth was to require auditor association with an expanded audit committee report to investors, which would likely require some sort of SEC action, providing some level of assurance regarding the completeness and reasonableness of an expanded audit committee report is something the UK FRC has considered in a proposal. So these examples are not meant to represent all the potential alternatives recommended by investors. We just wanted to give you an idea of some of the areas of possible consideration in the upcoming release. Like with any change, there may be potential challenges or unintended consequences. Some of the areas indicated by outreach participants, and I'll summarize them briefly because Jennifer touched on them, are one, legal liability, confidentiality, and privacy considerations relative to the auditor, preparer, and audit committee. Secondly, possible confusion among investors and the marketplace if the auditor were to provide views that may compete with management views. Third, the potential time and cost of an audit related to the additional time required by the auditor, which could be significant in preparing and reviewing a narrative qualitative auditor's report. If investors believe this supplemental information will be valuable for investment decisions, auditors would need to take appropriate care, and our standards would need to ensure that appropriate care is taken in its preparation and review, like is done for management's MD&A. Another concern is that auditor reporting and information about the audit of the financial statements could inhibit communications among the parties. And lastly, the possibility that the auditor providing information about the company's financial statements could cause preparers to default to auditor preference on judgments or accounting policies or estimates, raising questions of auditor independence with respect to those financial statements. We plan to explore these possible challenges, among others, in the concept release. Let me now make brief concluding remarks. In summary, one thing is crystal clear from our outreach. There is considerable desire for change by investors for more and better information from the auditor about the audit and about the auditor's views of the financial statements. Others say that that information, if it's needed, could be provided through enhanced disclosures required by FASB or by enhanced audit committee report required by the SEC. The general investor response to those points is that those improvements would still be welcome, but investors still want to hear from the auditor about the auditor's views regarding the audit and auditor reporting. Our goal is to develop a concept release for the board's consideration at an open public meeting on or about June 30th. We would then hope to have a roundtable discussion among many participants in the fall and to move forward with proposed changes to the auditor's report in the first quarter of 2012. Mr. Chairman and members of the board, that concludes our presentation. We look forward to your comments and questions.
Well, thank you for the presentation, Marty. Before we go farther, I think each board member, each of my colleagues, is going to want to have a brief statement here to set their mindset out and set the stage. But I want to acknowledge your leadership as the chief auditor in carrying forward and developing this groundbreaking project. And I want to thank Jennifer Rand, your deputy, the whole project team, Jessica Watts, Dan Mutzig, and Diane Jules. This has required a great deal of hard work by a very small and highly expert team and the board, and I know the public appreciates it. A brief word about context. Embedded in this investor call for more information, I think, is clearly a call for investors, for auditors to serve investors in a way that they do not now see as being a direct or obvious part of their calling, and I think we've learned a lot about that already. Dealing with a private investor who has commissioned them or engaged them to go due diligence is one thing. but in terms of the report that you're dealing with and the complexities you're dealing with, there's a disagreement, or at least there's a disconnect in their role that permeates a lot of the conflict that and disagreement in the advice that Jennifer and you have relayed. And I think that this, to get to the bottom of this and to address this disagreement, I would like to start the analysis with the unique nature of the U.S. securities markets. And this is a matter of significance as well as context. I believe the markets here serve a purpose fundamentally different from others in the world. I'm risking the charge of exceptionalism here, but our markets do provide for a formation of capital and ownership by dispersing minority interests widely among millions of individual savers, dependent on the preservation and growth of their investments for their long-term plans, for their livelihood, for meeting the expenses of college, for their children, for assuring their retirement. Now, other markets do provide for dispersed ownership, but none of these markets are as deeply committed to the model as ours are. And that commitment has been something that has almost become a part of the American dream. It has paid off. And indeed, it's been so successful that more than half of the families in America rely on the equity markets and their affiliated investments they make for their livelihood. And this includes, of course, foreign investors. We have a $15 trillion capital market here, equity market. The next market is the Republic of China at $5 trillion. And ladies and gentlemen, if I'm to believe the economists' numbers for 2011, you've got to go a long way and you've got to do a lot of aggregating before you get any group of disparate countries and markets close to $15 trillion. This appeared yesterday in Mr. Barnier's remarks and in the Financial Times. Three-fourths of the economy in Europe is banking activity, 25%. Of the European economy consists of the activities in the financial markets, and Michel Barnier characterized this as the opposite of the United States, to take his accurate, I think, characterization. Our audit reports, accordingly, ought to reflect the needs of dispersed owners, and this, I think, is a starting principle rather than a conclusion. There are practical challenges in what we do. You have laid out the practical challenges. We must address these. We must think about what auditors are capable of producing for mass consumption within a short filing period and given the costs, burdens, and the implications for registrants and preparers. But the objective, I think, is that we should consider ways to create consistency of reporting. None of us have a good reaction to boilerplate. We all think of boilerplate as something that emerges in disclosure and in financial reporting to the disadvantage of understanding and transparency. But investors ought, after our project is complete, investors ought to be able to have greater assurance that differences in what companies say in their financial reporting reflect real differences in the quality of the financial reporting of the preparer that is subject to the audit, and not differences between the engagement partners or the time and attention that the engagement partners gave, and not differences in the kind of rigor and the standards that the firm and the engagement partners brought to the task. And that, I think, is something of a guiding principle, and it will go into a few questions that I've got. But first, a remark about process. Marty, you've done a wonderful job and described it to all of us of the extensive outreach you've done. And given the wide impact the project could have, I think it's very important that you've provided here the public insight into what the board's consideration of these issues is going to be. It's the first time, I understand, that the board has received a staff presentation on a major standard-setting project in public without a concrete proposal. And I think we're not going to take a vote today. There's nothing here to vote on. But as you've said, you intend to move to a concept release, and you have a schedule. And I guess in terms of the concept release, do you think, as a question, do you think that it will enable us to distinguish this concept of what the auditor did versus what the auditor found, the fact basis, opinion versus the prescriptive or prospective opinion. Do you think that we can frame questions that will enable us to put that in context and draw some meaningful distinctions so that auditors can get guidance and can know what they're supposed to do? How would you do that?
I think we can do that. Thank you for that question, Mr. Chairman. We've done, as you said, we've performed a lot of outreach, and we've also had the benefit of some outreach performed for the investor advisory group. So we've heard a lot about what investors feel they need. We've also heard the views of the others who are concerned, have expressed various concerns about it. I think we're on our way to exploring what potential examples might look like for the possible solutions to this auditor's report. And we would propose to put those examples in the concept release along with discussion as to the pros and cons and issues around that. So I think we can crystallize the issues to try to get at what types of standards do we have to put out there such that there can be reasonable consistency around the additional reporting that takes place, which I think is one of the concerns that some of the parties have. So I think the concept release is an important and necessary next step to get much deeper answers around much more explicit descriptions of what an auditor's supplemental report would look like.
Because you said standards should lead to greater care.
Yes, sir.
And I assume that includes guidance.
Yes.
If it's greater care, there would be guidance, and auditors would not be left to speculate as to what they're supposed to do in an AD&A. Would an AD&A require SEC separate rulemaking or SEC action other than what we normally do when we send a standard to the SEC?
I always turn to our general counsel when it comes to separate rulemaking, and so why don't I do that at this point?
Sure. As a general matter, as you know, the SEC is responsible for what types of disclosures issuers need to make and which of those disclosures in general require auditing or some other level of auditor association. The PCAOB, of course, is responsible for then how those audits or other engagements are carried out and reported on. Some of the things Marty's described today, such as a new report from the audit committee, obviously would require SEC action. Some of these other things are a little grayer and would have to be explored further as the details emerge. As a practical matter, certainly the SEC would be quite closely involved, and our staff would collaborate with their staff on any project of this sort, of course, because they have to prove any of our rule changes to begin with. So I think if there were some SEC action required, that'd be something we'd look more closely at as the project progressed.
I might just add to that that as this project has been progressing, we have been in constant and regular dialogue with the staff of the SEC, so they're well informed about these matters.
Of course, Section 10 Cap A of the Exchange Act requires that if an auditor finds fraud, the auditor must report up the line and must at the end of the, unless he receives a satisfactory response, must eventually decline the, must resign. You mentioned the fact that our rules require an auditor to look for fraud. Those rules all stay in effect. So you are pointing to, I take it, a system of disclosure that is addressed in part to the slippery slope that people found in some of the recent financial crisis and the reporting that came out of it. Is it your view, and would the concept release clarify the extent to which auditors reporting on or commenting on estimates or on the other aspects of your third area essentially have the ability to intervene earlier and to begin to sound the alarm if there is a trend or a material trend that is dangerous? Is it risk-based? Is that the direction of this?
There's a number of maybe two questions there, so let me try to take them both. The first, I think, deals with what the changes to the auditor's reporting model does and doesn't do, and the second one talks about risk, and let me touch on that. So, in essence, fundamentally in dealing with the changes in the auditor's report, we don't intend to change, at this point, other auditing standards. And so it's really taking the result of the completion of the audit and just changing what the auditor says about the audit in the audit report. It is viewed by many, particularly investors, that saying more than the financials simply present fairly will give them greater insight into what the auditor viewed as significant risks as part of that audit, risks of material misstatement in the financial statements, risks of significant measurement uncertainty. Clearly, many of the numbers that are in financial statements, the estimation processes, fair valuation processes, result in a range of possible outcomes, and management select a number which they think is, for one reason or another, the most reasonable. I think investors want to hear where on the scale of reasonableness did management's judgments and estimates come out. So it's that type of thing that this report would shed light on. It wouldn't create new auditing standards to do new work to dig into things further at this point. It would go to providing light on what the auditor already knows. The question of risk becomes an interesting one, though, because we have had many discussions with investors where the term risk is used, and I think we have to think about that word carefully. There is the general responsibility of the auditor to be concerned about the risk of material misstatement in the financial statements, whether due to error or fraud. And there's also other business risk, like will our product be successful? Is our business model sustainable in the long term? While the auditors have to have some knowledge of that for the purposes of their planning of their audit and thinking about how to do the audit, it isn't their responsibility today to evaluate business risk for purposes of reporting on those risks. So we want to be careful in the concept release that we're not setting different expectations. In some respect, that latter one would change the role of the auditor, which some are asking about as well. Should auditors do more about understanding risk in the company and the risk management processes? But I think that goes more towards the project, the role of the auditor, than the auditor's reporting model.
Those are very helpful distinctions, and this is an area that needs clarification, clarity, and distinctions. In turning it over to my colleagues, we're going to observe for no special reason today seniority, and we may follow a different order later, but at the present time, Mr. Gelser, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I would like to make a statement and then also ask you a few questions. And I want to begin, as I think you've already made clear, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Bauman, by underscoring the importance of this project. Investors have been loud and clear in telling the board that they want more from the auditor than the traditional pass-fail report. For example, at the meeting of the board's investor advisory group last week, the board heard the results of an informal survey conducted by several of the IAG members, led by Professor Carcello, and they found that nearly half of respondents believed that the current audit report does not provide valuable information that is integral to understanding the financial statements. Almost one in five thought that the standard unqualified report was of no use to them at all. If these conclusions are representative of the views of financial statement users generally, they should be alarming to the audit profession and certainly a call to action for the board. I don't think that the traditional auditor's report should be abandoned, but I do agree that the board needs to look seriously at how it can enhance auditor communications with financial statement users. We will certainly not be alone in doing that. As has already been mentioned, several other groups, including IOSCO, the International Auditing and Assurance Standards Board, and the European Commission, are already studying whether to expand the auditor's obligation to communicate information about the audit or about the financial statements. We may all agree that there's considerable hunger for more insight and information from the auditors. I believe, however, that there are some fundamental issues that still need to be resolved before we can fashion a new reporting model. In particular, I certainly have reservations about whether the auditor should become an independent source of information about the company's financial statements, including about the risks that are inherent in them and the judgments or decisions that went into preparing them. In my view, information of that type should, in the first instance, be management's responsibility. The auditor's core function should continue to be to attest to the accuracy and completeness of information management provides, not to provide a competing view of the company's financial reporting through the eyes of the auditor. This doesn't mean, however, that auditors should confine themselves to the conventional pass-fail opinion, or that they should not provide new forms of information to help users understand the financial statements. The auditor could, without supplanting management's role, provide information about what the auditor did in performing the audit. Discussion about the auditor's view of the significant audit risks, that is, the risks of material misstatement in the financial statements, and how the auditor addressed those risks might well provide users with fresh insight into issues surrounding the company's financial reporting. Risk, including the risk of fraud, is something that the auditor is already forced to think about in planning and performing the audit, requiring the auditor to tell users what it concluded and how it responded would dovetail with the risk assessment standards the board adopted last year. Auditors might also be required, this has been discussed, to make greater use of emphasis paragraphs in their opinions, or to indicate in other ways which of the things management has disclosed are, in the auditor's view, the most significant to understanding the company's financial reporting. In that vein, the French have adopted an approach under which the auditor provides justification for his or her opinion, but does so by referring to particular disclosures the company itself has made. In addition, I think there are ways that the scope of the audit could be expanded. Today, the auditor is responsible for expressing an opinion on the financial statements, including the disclosures and the notes, of course. However, as to accompanying financial information, such as that in the management's discussion and analysis, the auditor's current responsibilities are more limited. Requiring an auditor's opinion on the accuracy and completeness of MD&A might be a way of leveraging the attest function to provide investors with more assurance about management's assertions and management's with more incentive to fully comply with the MD&A. This idea could be extended to other information outside of the financial statements, such as an expanded risk disclosure-oriented audit committee report. So I'm looking forward to a concept release that will expose these ideas and others to discussion and debate. Along those lines, I want to end with a couple words about transparency and our standard-setting process. In the past, board public meetings on standard-setting matters have been limited to situations in which the board was voting on a proposed release or on a final standard. Critics have said that these limited public opportunities to hear board interaction with the staff and weren't adequate to permit a full understanding of the board's thinking and standard setting. This meeting, in which the staff is briefing the board on the results of its outreach and seeking guidance on whether and how to move to a concept release stage, is an effort to address those criticisms. I hope we'll make it routine to have discussions like this in public in the future. Before I turn to a couple of questions, I also want to recognize the hard work that has gone into the reporting model research and outreach and preparing for the discussion this morning. In addition to our chief auditor, Marty Bauman, the team includes Jennifer Rand, deputy chief auditor, who serves as the project leader, associate chief auditors Jessica Watts, Dan Mutzig, and assistant chief auditor Diane Jules. I know you've already put in many late nights and weekends on this project, and of course, as Jim indicated, the project is still just beginning. So thank you very much for all your effort. And the chairman's brought out some important points in his questions. Let me just touch on a couple of other things. I mean, first, as I already indicated, we heard what I thought was a fairly sobering presentation from the investor advisory group last week about investors' views of the utility of the current audit report. You've already commented about your outreach. I mean, just from a general perspective, do you feel that what we heard last week from the IAG was consistent with the results of your outreach? Were you surprised by any of it? Was there a disconnect?
No, there was really very consistent information that the IAG reported to the board a week ago or so, and the report that we were preparing to give to the board today. So I think the views that investors have that the current report just doesn't meet their needs, which has been expressed for, as we've all said, for many, many years, but just hasn't been dealt with, comes across loud in the IAG presentation and comes across loud and clear in what we heard in all of our investor outreach.
That certainly seems to be the case. I mean, of course, the IAG, by its nature, is, well, I guess one leg of a four-legged stool. You also heard from preparers, from auditors, and from audit committees. And Jennifer's outlined kind of the differences in views between the various groups. And I just, I know how much time and effort is going into these outreach meetings. I think they've been taking place since, last fall?
Yeah, since about October.
Perhaps. Do you think that's a model that we might use in other kinds of standard setting? I mean, it's certainly given us a running start on the concept release and perhaps on a proposal. On the other hand, it's obviously a lot of work for the staff. Are there other projects that might lend themselves to the same thing?